Record indicate all the jurors present, counsel and parties present.
Thank you, Your Honor. David Barker.
Would you please state your full name and spell your last name for the record?
David L. Barker. B-A-R-K-E-R.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Dr. Barker.
Good afternoon, Mr. Pantone.
Would you state your present employment, please?
I'm currently Vice President and Chief Scientific Officer at Illumina Incorporated.
And you have held those two positions the entire time you've been with Illumina?
Yes.
Prior to joining Illumina, sir, is it correct that you were employed by a company called Molecular Dynamics at some point before you came to Illumina?
Yes, I was.
At Molecular Dynamics, you worked with Jay Flatley?
Yes, I did.
Did you report to Jay Flatley the entire time you were at Molecular Dynamics?
Essentially the entire time, yes.
And how long of a period was that?
11 years.
Were you ever a chief science officer before you got that job at Illumina?
I was the chief science advisor at Amersham Pharmaceutical, a biotech. It was the equivalent position. This was the company that acquired Molecular Dynamics.
Was Illumina the first time you held the title of chief scientific officer?
Yes.
Do you recall the date on which you were first contacted about the CSO position at Illumina?
Yes, I believe it was February 4th of the year 2000.
And that first contact was by Jay Flatley, is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
And after that initial contact, there were a series of discussions and negotiations with respect to you becoming CSO at Illumina, is that right?
Yes.
And Jay Flatley used stock or equity as an inducement or incentive for you to join the company. Is that right?
Well, he offered me a position which was an attractive position and involved responsibility as chief scientific officer. It also involved a salary and stock.
Isn't it correct, in an effort to try to talk you into joining Illumina, that Mr. Flatley specifically used stock and talked about the financial upside of stock as an incentive for you to join the company?
Yes, of course that's the incentive for joining a startup company where there's a great deal of risk.
And in terms of the potential financial upside that Jay Flatley discussed with you, what did he talk to you about in terms of the potential dollar price per share that Illumina had?
Well, in our discussion, of course, we all know in a risky venture like this, the actual price that a stock will reach can't be predicted in advance, but in our discussion, we calculated how much the stock would be worth if, say, the price were $10 a share or $20 a share, that sort of thing.
Or $30 a share?
Or $30 a share. And in my own mind, I thought, what if it's $50 a share?
Did the math pretty quickly.
Sure.
What was your starting salary at Illumina as CSO?
$200,000 a year.
In terms of interviews for the position of CSO, you interviewed with Jay Flatley, correct?
Yes.
And John Stuopnagel?
Yes.
And Mark Chi?
Yes.
When did those interviews take place?
It was a decision that had to be made kind of quickly because part of the reason for Jay asking me to join was to help with the initial public offering process, and that was expected to occur fairly quickly. As it turned out, it didn't occur as quickly as we thought it would, but as a result, there was a period of about a month of February, in which I visited Illumina and then arranged to come back to give a seminar, which is traditional in any employment opportunity like that, give a seminar and have interviews with other members of the company. I'd already met John and Mark before because of business relationships where they had come to visit Molecular Dynamics, so I'd known them a little bit, talked with them further on these meetings. Maybe there were at least two visits in that month.
The month of February?
February and early March.
Of 2000?
Yes.
Do you recall, Dr. Barker, that on your first day on the job, that you helped write the S-1 registration statement?
I think officially it was even before I was an official employee of Illumina. I helped. Well, this was going on up in the San Francisco area and really started in a consulting role, helping to write the IPO document. Yes.
Do you recall if the first real work you did for Illumina was helping to write the S-1 registration statement?
That's not quite correct. First thing I did was I attended the all-hands meeting, which was the organization meeting of all the people involved in doing the IPO, and that was in advance of beginning to write the S-1 document.
So the all-hands meeting was a meeting of people specifically who were going to be working on the S-1 and the IPO.
Yes. The bankers and lawyers and so on helping with that, as well as other people at the company who were giving seminars to inform the people who would be working on the IPO of all the scientific, technical, and business information about the company that would be important to the IPO.
When was that first meeting, that all-hands meeting?
That was on March 6th, I believe.
Let's take a look at Exhibit 162. Dr. Barker, have you seen these emails before?
I think you may have shown them to me during my deposition.
Do you recall there being an issue in terms of what your actual start date was, the official start date at Illumina?
I don't recall that it was an issue particularly, no.
Was there an issue with respect to timing your start date so you could take advantage of any sort of stock deal at Illumina?
Well, I wasn't actually aware of what the concerns were about stock price and so on, I presume you're referring to. I think for, as the email suggests, for stock purposes, it says it was good that I could get the vesting started as of March 6th and be allowed to buy restrictive stock options.
Your official start date, is it correct it was March 16th as your date of employment?
Yes.
And on March 15th of 2000, you were a consultant to Illumina, is that correct?
I assume so.
Is that your understanding?
That's my understanding.
When you came on board as the new chief science officer, did you then take over responsibilities for the scientific advisory board?
Yes, I did.
And when did you take over responsibility for the scientific advisory board? Would that have been as of March of 2000?
It was part of the duties of the chief scientific officer, so yes.
How long did it take you, sir, before you held the first meeting of the Scientific Advisory Board after you came on board?
I don't remember precisely. Possibly you can refresh my memory. Maybe January of the following year.
Did you have any meeting of the Scientific Advisory Board at all during the year 2000?
I don't believe so. I think that was a busy time. We were doing the IPO and so on.
David Walt also testified in this case, and he said that part of the reason for any delay in scheduling an SAB meeting was that you were still trying to get up to speed on the science. Would you agree with that?
There was a lot of work to do to get fully acquainted with the new company, yes.
In fact, when you hit the ground on March of 2000, when you first joined Illumina, you were not intimately familiar with the company science, were you?
Not intimately, although I was familiar with the company in advance. As I mentioned, John and Mark had been to Molecular Dynamics to give presentations previously.
How many presentations had they made before you started?
I also visited Illumina once on behalf of Amersham, so I probably heard a total of 3 presentations.
Prior to...
On the company's technology.
You were taking over for Tony Zarnik as CSO. Would you tell the jury your view in terms of how cooperative or uncooperative Dr. Zarnik was in terms of turning the reins over to you?
I thought it was important that I try to establish a good relationship with Tony, and I thought he was quite helpful and cooperative with me in giving me advice on what the chemistry department was doing. And I should mention that in addition to having responsibility for overall scientific matters at Illumina, I was also specifically supervising the chemistry department. And Tony had been doing that before, and I asked him to help me get up to speed on the different things the chemistry department was doing, and he was cooperative in helping me do that.
So he did that to your satisfaction?
Early on, yes, he did.
Did Tony Zarnik ever do anything to interfere with or to undermine you as the company's new CSO?
Not to my knowledge.
Early on, after you came on board as CSO, you noticed that there was a conflict between molecular biology and chemistry, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Mark Chi blamed Tony Zarnik for that?
No, not specifically. At least, not to me. I just noticed it from the way people interacted.
Didn't Mark Chi suggest to you Tony Zarnik was responsible for the alleged conflict between the two groups?
I don't believe I ever had that conversation with Mark, no.
Dr. Barker, I need to read to you from some of your deposition testimony. See if it might refresh your recollection.
Fine.
Beginning on page 44, line 16, your testimony was, "Did anyone ever blame Dr. Zarnik for having caused or contributed to the conflict between the two groups?"
Yes, there was a feeling that he contributed to this conflict.
Who had that feeling? Strike that. Who expressed that feeling to you?
Well, let's see. Mark suggested that. And then the other side of the chemistry group, people thought Mark had contributed to that as well.
The Mark is Mark Chi?
Yes, it's possible when I asked him about the conflict as I saw it arising that, or saw it existed, that he could have held that Tony was somewhat responsible for that. It wasn't my purpose, though, to try to blame anyone.
Did you, sir, ever see, observe anything on the part of Dr. Zarnik that you thought contributed to the conflict between the two groups?
I can't say specifically that I observed such a thing. The residue of the conflict was there. I was just trying to solve it.
You recall testifying at deposition that you never observed anything that Tony Zarnik did or said that contributed to a conflict.
If you say so, I don't remember.
Can you give me the approximate date, Dr. Barker, that you found out that Dr. Zarnik was claiming discrimination?
I don't remember the exact date, but I believe he filed a complaint in April sometime.
And did anyone affiliated with Illumina ever interview you in connection with the investigation into the complaint of discrimination?
Sorry, did anyone interview me to...
To ascertain the facts and circumstances. Any facts and circumstances that you may be aware of?
Formally for that purpose, no, I don't believe so.
Now, when you first came on board, was Dr. Zarnik reporting directly to you?
Yes.
Was he research fellow by that point?
That was his new title, research fellow.
So how long of a period of time was it that Dr. Zarnik reported to you when he was research fellow and you were CSO?
From the time I started, which we've established was middle of March, until the first week in May, I believe.
So a few weeks?
About 6 weeks.
Did you have time during that 6 week period to assess or evaluate Dr. Zarnik's performance as the research fellow?
Well, not really. He was in the process of deciding what his goals were, and we were mainly focusing on getting me up to speed in the chemistry department, so I wouldn't say that I had a chance to evaluate his performance very greatly. I don't recall that he did much as research fellow during that period.
And then Jay Flatley changed the reporting relationship so that Dr. Zarnik would report to him, correct?
That's correct.
Now, mention goals for Dr. Zarnik. Let's take a look, please, at Exhibit 163. Do you recognize this document, Dr. Barker?
I brought the wrong glasses. I brought reading glasses.
There's a binder behind you.
That's okay.
Do you recognize this as a draft of goals?
Yes.
You discussed this draft with Tony Zarnik, is that right?
I believe this was a draft that Tony prepared of potential goals for himself as research fellow.
You discussed this with Dr. Zarnik, is that right?
Yes.
Some of the handwriting on this document is your handwriting, correct?
I see two notes that are likely to be my handwriting.
This one here, under the 30-day goal column?
Yes.
And this one at the bottom under the project column, is that right?
Yes, I can't read that one very well.
I'm not sure I can read your writing. Recruit for 2 open chemistry.
Yes, great.
Do you recall the approximate time frame when you met with Dr. Zarnik to discuss this draft?
This would have likely been in mid-April sometime, something like that, possibly a little earlier.
And you and Dr. Zarnik and Jay Flatley then got together. And the three of you discussed Tony Zarnik's goals, isn't that right?
That's likely, yeah.
This was still at a time when you were Tony Zarnik's immediate supervisor.
If it was before the time he was transferred to Jay, yes.
This meeting involving the three of you, Tony Zarnik, and Jay Flatley, this would have still been at a time when you were his boss, correct?
That's likely true, yes. I don't specifically remember the timing of such a meeting.
Let's take a look at Exhibit 208, please. There's been some testimony, sir, that Dr. Zarnik's reporting relationship was changed from you to Jay Flatley on or about May 4th, 2000. Does that date sound about right?
Yes.
And you do believe that prior to that date that you, David Barker, and Jay Flatley, Tony Zarnik, discussed goals for Dr. Zarnik, correct?
Yes.
Next page. This is a set of goals that you discussed at that meeting, the meeting prior to May 4th, 2000, correct?
This was the initial modification that I made to the draft that Tony had submitted.
This is the one that you, Jay Flatley, and Tony Zarnik got together to discuss prior to May 4th. Is that right?
This is the one that I don't remember the discussion you're talking about with Jay, to tell you the truth. So I'm assuming it existed, if Tony's email was correct there. I do remember that I crossed out the patent review committee on the original draft of Tony's goals.
You were referring to the marked outline.
Right, because we were going to hire a new patent attorney for the company. That would be her responsibility.
Now, Dr. Barker, do you recall these goals, the ones we're looking at on the screen, that these were revised? And they were revised because of an acceleration in the dispute between Dr. Zarnik and Illumina?
Revised by?
Revised by Jay Flatley.
Well, I don't know that that was... I don't think that's a correct characterization of why they were revised.
Do you recall testifying about this subject at deposition?
You can remind me if you'd like.
Were you aware at the time that there was some sort of dispute going on?
By this time, Tony had filed a complaint.
Don't you recall, sir, these goals were revised, at least in part, because there had been an acceleration in that dispute?
My sense of why the goals were revised were so that they could be measurable and doable, this being important in a case if there's any possibility of a dispute with an employee. It's important the goals be measurable and doable, and that's my opinion as to what the main reason for revising the goals was.
In terms of the process for revising the goals, is it correct that you and Jay Flatley and John Stulpnagel and Mark Chi, all four of you, got together in a conference room to talk about revising Tony Zarnik's goals?
That's correct.
Had you set goals for any other employee at Illumina as of that point?
Had I at that time?
Yes.
No.
Were you responsible for setting Mark Chi's goals?
I was responsible for supervising Mark Chi and in carrying out goals which had been set for him in the molecular biology department earlier in the year. We had not, in the 6 weeks since I joined, changed those goals.
Did Mark Chi report to you?
Yes.
Was that the case the entire time after you joined Illumina, that Mark Chi reported directly to you the entire time?
Yes.
Have you set goals for Mark Chi at any point after you joined?
Yes, we set goals each year. In the case of Mark Chi, since he's one of the senior members of the company, his goals are for the department that he supervises, and as a result, those were agreed upon not just by myself, but by the senior staff in general.
Who would have set Mark Chi's? Maybe you know, maybe you don't. Who set his 2000 goals?
I wasn't involved in that.
Let's take a look, please, at Exhibit 227. Do you recognize this document, Dr. Barker?
Yes.
These are the final goals that were assigned to Tony Zarnik in May of 2000. Is that correct?
That's correct.
This first goal relating to immunocoding. Do you recall that prior to this point in time, prior to May 19th of 2000, that Dr. Zarnik had suggested to you that perhaps an expert consultant be retained to assist in the area of immunocoding technology?
I'm sorry, what was the timing of the suggestion?
Some point prior to when Dr. Zarnik got these goals.
I think that's likely. This was one of the goals that Tony had proposed on the previous set and one of the ones that we retained on the three out of the long list that he proposed. And he, I think, suggested that a consultant be called in to help with this project.
Let's take a look at Exhibit 190. We'll come back to this in a minute. Do you recognize this as an April 21st, 2000 email that Tony Zarnik sent to you?
Yes.
This was at a time that you were still Tony Zarnik's immediate supervisor?
Yes.
And this immunocoding project, that is the first line of the goals that we had just looked at, correct?
Yes.
And he is suggesting bringing in an antibody expert to help with the immunocoding, somebody called Gary David, correct?
Yes.
And as of April 21st, 2000, while you still were his supervisor, you thought that sounded fine and you'd be happy to join in the brainstorming, correct?
The request is to interview a potential consultant, and I said fine, yes, and I did join in the brainstorming.
Let's look at Exhibit 192, please. Do you recognize this as an email that Tony Zarnik forwarded on to you?
Yes.
Again, this was on April 26th of 2000. So this would have been when you still were Dr. Zarnik's immediate supervisor.
Yes, that's right.
He's telling you that you are on with this consultant, Gary David, correct?
Right.
Did you folks meet with Gary David?
Yes.
When did that meeting take place?
I'm not certain, but I assume it was Monday morning.
Let's look at Exhibit 213, please. You recognize this as an email that you sent to Tony Czarnik on May 4th, 2000?
Yes.
This was the evening after you had learned that Jay Flatley was going to take over supervising Tony Czarnik. Is that right?
This is right, May 4th.
And the bottom line of this email, you are suggesting that it does not make any sense to retain this consultant. Is that correct?
I thought what he offered was something that Tony can certainly do himself.
Do you know whether Dr. Czarnik ever got any assistance of any kind with respect to that first line of goals, the immunocoding project?
Any assistance?
Of any sort, either from...
Besides this consultation with Gary David.
Including but not limited to this consultation.
Not that I know of.
Jump back to 227, please. Specifically the second line. This project called Binary Oligo Encoding. Whose idea was it to add that to the list of goals?
This came out of the joint discussion that you mentioned between Jay, Mark, John, and myself.
Who specifically suggested adding that?
I can't remember specifically. It was a project that was known to be important to the company and something that Mark particularly wanted to do. It could have been Mark, could have been John.
Do you know, sir, whether the company had done any work in the area of binary oligo encoding before May of 2000?
I don't believe so. This was considered easier to do, though, than the antibody encoding, so that was one reason it was added as a doable goal.
We've had some testimony about what these various numbers mean in terms of the number of codes that are being referenced here. For example, the 90-day goal that deals with 2 to the 12th power goals. That's a number that's more than 4,000. Is that correct?
4,096, I believe.
And as of this date, sir, May 19th of 2000, how many specific bead types had Illumina been able to decode as of that date?
Above 200. A couple hundred bead types. Of course, the advantage of this method was it was much easier to do large numbers.
Move to strike the remainder of the answer as non-responsive.
Granted.
How many had been decoded as of this day?
I think it was 252, something like that.
257?
Yes.
As of this same date, May 19th of 2000, isn't it correct, sir, the 768 decoding experiment had not been successful yet?
The experiment? That hadn't been done yet, hadn't been successful.
There had been a 768 decode experiment before that date.
I'm not sure. I wasn't in charge of decoding at that time.
Did you have any information on that point as chief science officer of the company in terms of whether the 768 decode experiment had been successful yet as of May of 2000?
Can't recall specifically at this date.
Let's talk about the year goal for binary oligo encoding. You remember talking about that at your deposition?
Yes.
This goal, this year goal for binary oligo encoding, this implied to you, sir, that Dr. Czarnik was being asked to show the feasibility of doing more than 1 million codes within a year. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
And you think that's pretty tough, don't you?
Yes, that's a challenging and difficult goal, extremely important to the company.
You felt it would be very difficult for Dr. Czarnik to achieve all of these goals, all three goals, simultaneously within a year, didn't you?
Yes, I thought it would be difficult to do, but I thought if he applied himself, he could make good progress.
In fact, you thought the first goal, standing alone, just by itself, was an aggressive goal, true?
Yes.
And second goal, standing alone, just by itself, was an aggressive goal?
Yes, aggressive goal.
And in combination, you thought it would be very hard for Dr. Czarnik to achieve all these goals in 1 year, correct?
Yes, that way it would be in alignment with goals that everybody in the company has. We have very aggressive goals.
Is it correct, sir, that Jay Flatley expressed the opinion it was unlikely that Tony Czarnik would meet these goals?
He may have said that based upon his understanding or his knowledge of Tony's previous work.
Isn't it correct that Jay Flatley said it was unlikely Dr. Czarnik would meet these goals?
Given his work ethic and previous work he'd done, yes.
Same question as to Dr. Stupnagel. He also stated it was very unlikely Dr. Czarnik would meet these goals, correct?
I can't remember that John said anything about it. Could have.
Mark Chi?
Can't recall for sure. Mark expressed an opinion. We all knew these were aggressive goals.
Let me ask you a few questions about the roadshow. You were on the roadshow team.
I was.
Before leaving on the roadshow, you thought it was likely that you would get a lot of questions about decoding, true?
We thought we had to be prepared for questions about decoding because that was the part of the technology that was different from other array technologies.
You expected a lot of questions on this subject.
Expected some questions.
I'll read from your deposition testimony, page 139, line 13. Why did you feel that the 768 decode experiment was not ready for public presentation?
Well, I didn't have enough time to review it, and it wasn't an issue, turned out not to be an issue, on the roadshow.
Because nobody asked about it?
Nobody asked questions or was really concerned about decoding, so it turned out not to be an issue. I think there was some thought beforehand that we might be getting a lot of questions on decoding. Turned out, there wasn't an issue.
Does that refresh your recollection?
I agree with that.
So before you went on the roadshow, you thought you might be getting a lot of questions about decoding?
Yes.
You have about 5 minutes, counsel.
Literally 10 minutes, but who's counting? I'll do my best, Judge. When you left on the roadshow, Dr. Barker, you had scientific evidence you could only decode a few hundred beads, right?
We had decoded only a few hundred beads, yes.
You were optimistic, at least, that the 768 decode experiment would show you could decode a greater number of beads?
We had experiments planned to decode more beads all the time and work up to 1,500 to 2,000 bead types, which is what our array held, yes.
Do you recall getting an email from Mark Chi while you were on the roadshow?
Yes.
And that email contained a PowerPoint slide, is that right?
Yes.
Is this the PowerPoint slide that has an Illumina Bates stamp number of ILL1560? And does that look familiar?
Looks familiar. Looks to be such a slide.
Does it appear to be the PowerPoint slide Mark Chi sent to you on the roadshow?
Yes.
Your understanding as to why Mark Chi sent you that email, a PowerPoint slide, was for possible use on the roadshow, isn't that right?
I think Mark was providing us with the latest information on the progress of decoding and making it available for us should we want to use it on the roadshow. As it turned out, we didn't need to use it, didn't want to use it.
Turned out you didn't use it, but you understood he was sending it to you for the possible use on the roadshow if you felt that it was appropriate.
I think he was mainly keeping us up to date with the progress of experiments at the company. We never even considered using it.
You understood Mark Chi sent you that email and this PowerPoint slide in case people asked questions about decoding on the roadshow.
I'll object to the extent the question appears to be asking the witness to speculate about Mark Chi's state of mind.
Sustained.
Kevin Gunderson was the principal scientist on the 768 decode experiment, wasn't he?
That's correct.
At some point, Dr. Barker, you found out that there was a problem with mislabeled dye in connection with this experiment, correct?
Yes.
You found out from Kevin Gunderson?
There was general discussion about it some month or so after the roadshow. Yeah, I talked to Tony about it, talked with Kevin about it.
You concluded, strike that, this is when you were chief science officer at Illumina, you found out about this?
Yes.
You concluded that because of this mislabeling problem, at a minimum, you would have to do the experiment again, true?
Of course we'd want to repeat the experiment.
Is it fair to say, Dr. Barker, as a result of this mislabeling, as a scientist, you would have at least questioned the reliability of the scientific results from that experiment?
I would want to see the experiment done again, yes, because there was a problem in the materials used. However, it was a useful experiment that showed feasibility of decoding a large number of beads.
Is it fair to say, as a scientist, you would at least question the reliability of the results?
Yes.
You conducted meetings of your scientific staff when you were CSO, is that correct?
Yes.
You conducted meetings where both Tony Zarnik and Mark Chi were in attendance?
We had weekly research meetings of all the research staff, and Tony and Mark would be at those meetings.
Do you recall that during the course of those scientific meetings, Tony Zarnik was advocating that you quality control check your reagents, including your dyes, to make sure that the dyes and other reagents were what you thought they were?
I don't specifically remember those admonitions.
You don't recall Dr. Zarnik talking about this issue at meetings of senior scientists. Is that your testimony?
That's correct.
I'm going to read from your deposition transcript, beginning at page 157, line 3. This is in the context of talking about scientific staff meetings. This has to do with sort of this part of the schism between chemistry and molecular biology that existed. The belief on the part of the chemists, including Tony, and maybe perhaps because of him, was that everything should be understood clearly. Every chemical should be QC'd, so each bead type should be QC'd. Maybe that's going far, but as much as possible, every chemical element you are working with should be understood and verified in some way. Whereas on the other side, Mark was thinking, well, we've got so many things to work here. We're trying to deal with 768 bead types. If we wait to QC everything individually, we'll just not make the same amount of progress. So I'd say there were valid points on both sides, and this was more of a disagreement in philosophy that needed to be worked out. Do you recall that type of discussion?
Yes.
I don't believe whether you mentioned this took place in a meeting of any kind. We're talking about scientific staff meetings you were holding. Do you recall these discussions happening generally?
Yes.
Do you recall that Tony Zarnik was advocating checking the dyes, quality control checks on the dyes, to make sure they were what you thought you had?
I remember that he got more and more interested in this, but I think the statement you read is a good characterization of the situation. There was a sense the chemists have more of a sense. We have to understand more precisely, and molecular biologists, we need to work with hundreds and later thousands of things. If we stop to quality control everything all the time, we'll never get the experiment done.
You do recall Dr. Zarnik advocating checking the dyes to be sure they were what you really thought they were.
I don't remember him making a big point of that. Certainly, if he were real concerned about it, he could have done so.
You agreed with Dr. Zarnik, didn't you? That it was more important to do quality control checks on the reagents?
Yes, as much as possible.
After Tony Zarnik was fired, was responsibility for decoding taken away from Mark Chi and given to Steve Barnard?
Taken away is certainly not the right characterization. It was agreed for the following year, with the feasibility of decoding shown, that the development of decoding should now go on further under Steve Barnard's direction, and Steve reported to me.
As opposed to continuing under Mark Chi's direction, true?
That's correct. And Mark was in agreement on this. It was part of a joint decision that we made together.
How many shares of stock do you own, Dr. Barker?
At the present time, or?
Yes.
Let's see. 250,000 shares of stock, not all of which have vested.
And do you have any plans to leave Illumina?
No.
Nothing further.
Thank you.